Today is Tuesday, February 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
Well, things are quite tense right now. In fact, the tensions continue to escalate dangerously between the two countries since last Thursday's attack in the Indian portion of Kashmir.
That's reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad. Also ahead, Tehran's foreign minister accuses the U.S. and Israel of seeking war against his country over its nuclear program. And U.S. President Donald Trump warns Venezuela's military to stop helping Nicolas Maduro remain in power. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan warned today his country will swiftly retaliate if India launches a military action against it. Khan issued the warning in a nationally televised address amid dangerously escalating tensions between the two nuclear-armed nations following last week's suicide bombing of Indian troops in the disputed Kashmir region. New Delhi has blamed a Pakistan-based militant group, Jaish-e-Mohammed Jam, for plotting the attack. More than 40 Indian security personnel died when the bomber struck in a Pulwama district. Indian leaders have vowed to take punitive action against Islamabad, alleging the militant group is tied to the neighboring country's spy agency, a charge Pakistan rejects as baseless. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad for the latest on the tension between India and Pakistan.
Well, things are quite tense right now. In fact, the tensions continue to escalate dangerously between the two countries since last Thursday's attack in the Indian portion of Kashmir. That's what prompted Pakistan today first to write a letter to the United Nations Secretary General that he should intervene and try to defuse the tensions. And secondly, Prime Minister Imran Khan addressed the nation to basically tell India that Pakistan is ready to cooperate in any kind of investigations that India wants to conduct in the attack that killed more than 40 Indian soldiers. But so far, Imran Khan, the Prime Minister, said that India has not shared any evidence that would link any Pakistani to the attack on the Indian side of Kashmir. However, the Prime Minister clearly warned India that if India goes ahead and tries to impose some kind of a military conflict on Pakistan, then Pakistan will swiftly retaliate.
Now, this has been an ongoing conflict. So why would there be an attack just recently?
You know, Indian Kashmir has been suffering this Muslim insurgency for years, and India has long accused Pakistan of supporting these separatist organizations on the Indian side of Kashmir. And that has been the source of primary tensions, you know, between the two countries. Although Pakistan denies charges that it supports militarily these organizations or militant outfits, but Pakistan does maintain this long-running stance that it will continue to provide diplomatic political support to Kashmiri freedom struggles, as Pakistan puts it. So this tension has been there for years. The two countries have fought two full-fledged wars over Kashmir. But lately, the situation has been more tense because there has been no formal dialogue between India and Pakistan to try to normalize bilateral relations and try to find out solutions to these outstanding disputes. So that suspension of dialogue is, in fact, more, you know, worrisome for even the United States and for other superpowers or big countries. You know, Pakistan and India, they have tested nuclear devices since they last went to war in 1971. So the danger is that if there is a new military conflict between the two countries, it could escalate into a nuclear exchange between the two countries.
Well, do you think this is a priority for the international community to get involved at this time?
Well, at least for the United States, it is very important to try to de-escalate these tensions because President Trump's administration has been working closely with Pakistan in order to seek Pakistan's support to bring the Taliban insurgents to the table to find a peaceful settlement in Afghanistan. And Pakistan has maintained that for it to cooperate with the U.S. to promote a peace process in Afghanistan, it needs de-escalation on its eastern border with India, because Pakistan has some kind of influence over the Taliban insurgents in Afghanistan. And President Trump has already indicated that he might want to pull out American forces from Afghanistan. But for that, there has to be sustainable peace process in place. And for that, Pakistan plays an important role because, you know, it has been long accused that Taliban insurgents and their leaders have used Pakistani territory for orchestrating attacks in Afghanistan. So in that sense, having a calm situation in South Asia to promote a peaceful settlement in Afghanistan has been the priority for the Trump administration. So everybody is definitely looking at how the U.S. responds to this current situation, especially when there is a drawdown of American forces from Afghanistan on the cards.
That was reporter Ayaz Gul in Islamabad. Well, speaking at an international security conference in Munich Sunday, Iran's foreign minister accused the U.S. and Israel of seeking war against his country over its nuclear program. Earlier, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence accused some European countries of helping support Iran by trading with it. Henry Ridgewell reports from the conference.
Europe is treading a thin line, attempting to pacify its transatlantic ally while trying to keep the Iran nuclear deal alive. In recent days, those tensions were laid bare. US Vice President Mike Pence criticized European allies.
They've led the effort to create mechanisms to break up our sanctions. They call this scheme a special purpose vehicle. We call it an effort to break American sanctions against Iran's murderous revolutionary regime.
That special purpose vehicle, officially known as INSTEX, is a payment system designed to allow European companies to trade with Iran and bypass US sanctions, says lawyer Nigel Kushner of W Legal.
By not involving US dollars, not involving US persons, and certainly at the moment only being involved in the procurement of trade, which does not include products or services that are sanctioned by the US authorities.
Those conditions have not satisfied Iran. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif spoke at the Munich Security Conference.
INSTEX falls short of the commitments by the E3 to save the nuclear deal. Europe needs to be willing to get wet if it wants to swim against the dangerous tide of US unilateralism.
Europe is hoping that Iran will show patience. Europe is hoping that Iran will show patience, says sanctions lawyer Nigel Kushner.
I think on the Iranian side, they will play a waiting game and very much hope that next year Donald Trump might not be re-elected.
In Europe, Vice President Pence's speech at Munich has triggered fears that Washington has bigger plans, says Florence Gaub of the European Union Institute for Security Studies.
Not at all call for let's renegotiate the deal, but rather let's remove the regime in Tehran.
Washington has not explicitly called for regime change in Iran, but the US, Israel and many Arab states are growing increasingly vocal about the threat that Tehran poses. Despite pressure from allies in the Middle East and in the United States, Europe is sticking by the nuclear agreement that Washington withdrew from last year. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News at the Munich Security Conference, Germany.
Thank you, Henry. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump warned Venezuela's military yesterday to stop helping Nicolas Maduro remain in power in Venezuela.
You cannot hide from the choice that now confronts you. You can choose to accept President Guaido's generous offer of amnesty to live your life in peace with your families and your countrymen. President Guaido does not seek retribution against you. And neither do we.
Speaking in Miami, Trump urged Venezuela's military to permit aid to enter the country. He criticized Maduro as someone who would rather see his people starve than let aid in. Trump also spoke about the dangers of socialism and its effects on the economy of Venezuela, an oil-rich nation.
Crippling shortages of food and medicine plague the country. Socialism has so completely ravaged this great country that even the world's largest reserves of oil are no longer enough to keep the lights on. This will never happen to us.
The U.S. recognized opposition lawmaker Juan Guaido as president of Venezuela in January. American planes have brought food and medicine to Colombia and Brazil near the Venezuelan border. The aid is waiting to enter the country. Guaido plans to deliver the aid this Saturday with a group of volunteers he is organizing. In Europe, at least 22 countries have recognized Guaido as Venezuela's president. Some countries, including France, are calling for new elections as soon as possible. Well, officials of 16 states have filed a lawsuit disputing President Donald Trump's declaration of a national emergency on the country's southern border. The Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra, is leading the action in the U.S. District Court of the Northern District of California. He announced the move yesterday. The case says the emergency declaration is unconstitutional. It also says the order takes money away from other government programs. Becerra criticized Trump, saying he does not believe there is a crisis at the nation's border with Mexico. Some of the states joining the lawsuit are Colorado, Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, and Virginia. The Trump administration has not yet given a detailed response to the case, but the president has said he expected a suit to be brought in the Northern California district. Trump has promised to build a wall or barrier, saying it will prevent drugs and crime from crossing the border with Mexico. The administration plans to use money from the Defense Department budget to build it. Among the top stories in the world, Britain debates whether Islamic State recruits should be given a second chance. Negotiators from China and the U.S. will resume talks this week to resolve the ongoing trade war between the world's biggest economies. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the resurgence of anti-Semitism is a central problem for Jewish communities. And a terror suspect being chased by police blew himself up in Cairo last night, killing three officers. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. Socialist Senator Bernie Sanders from the U.S. state of Vermont announced today that he will run for president in 2020. Sanders' 2016 campaign to become the Democratic Party's candidate for president gained surprising support against former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Sanders calls for free college tuition and wants to expand the Medicare health insurance to all Americans. Medicare is a health insurance for retired citizens. Sanders faces a crowded field of Democratic candidates, including Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Kamala Harris of California. They have policy goals similar to those Sanders supports. This is VOA's International Edition, and we continue. Well, the UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says she is alarmed at the rising number of civilian casualties in Syria's northern Idlib and surrounding areas. Syrian government forces and their allies are intensifying their attacks against Islamic State militants and other rebels in the region. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the High Commissioner's headquarters in Geneva.
Syrian forces and their allies have escalated ground-based bombardments in the so-called demilitarized buffer zone in recent weeks. The zone includes Idlib and areas of northern Hama and western Aleppo governorate. The zone was created by Turkey and Russia in September to avert a Russian-backed Syrian army offensive against rebel groups in Idlib. The northwestern region is the last major part of Syria outside the control of President Bashar al-Assad's government. The United Nations had warned an attack in Idlib, where 3 million civilians were trapped, would trigger a humanitarian catastrophe. This agreement, however, has been unraveling since December. UN Human Rights Commissioner Michelle Bachelet says the recent surge in fighting has caused numerous civilian casualties. She warns that about 1 million people are in a very precarious situation. Her spokesman, Rupert Colville, says the High Commissioner is calling on all warring parties to ensure ensure civilians are protected and all military operations are conducted in accordance with international law.
Large numbers of civilians, including hundreds of thousands of displaced people in Idlib and northern Aleppo, are living an intolerable existence. They're trapped between the escalation of hostilities and bombardment on the one hand, and on the other they're forced to live under the extremist rule of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and other extremist fighters who regularly carry out targeted killings, abductions and arbitrary detention.
Colville says Bashley also worries about the well-being of some 20,000 people who have fled Islamic State-controlled areas in eastern Deir ez-Zor governorate in recent weeks. They are living in makeshift camps run by Kurdish armed groups, including U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces. Colville says they reportedly are being prevented from leaving the camps. He says the High Commissioner is particularly concerned about some 200 families who are being held hostage by IS in the area under its control. He says the families, including many women and children, are being subjected to intensified air and ground-based strikes by U.S.-led coalition forces and their SDF allies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Well, the Vatican's chief sexual crimes investigator says the Roman Catholic Church must break any code of silence over sexual abuse. He was speaking ahead of a four-day summit on the protection of minors that will start Thursday at the Vatican. He added that the summit, to be attended by presidents of bishops' conferences from around the world, will focus on the themes of responsibility, accountability, and transparency. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA from Rome.
Archbishop Charles Scicluna said Pope Francis's plans for the meeting include increasing awareness among the leadership of the Church about the prevention of abuse and the safeguarding of minors. He added they would share experiences and discuss issues such as the accountability of bishops, their responsibilities, and transparency. Archbishop Scicluna said attendees will have opportunities during the four-day meeting to hear the expectations of survivors of abuse. He said Pope Francis has in the past met with victims on a regular basis.
He realizes that if we're talking about wounds of people who feel betrayed on the most fundamental level, which is their dignity, their innocence, their faith, the Church needs to be about healing and not ignoring wounds or even making them worse.
But many doubt concrete results will emerge. Speaking in Rome Tuesday, Anne Barrett Doyle of the group Bishop Accountability said much is at stake with grieving and disillusioned Catholics all over the world, as thousands have been sexually abused by clergy for decades. She said the meeting must produce a solution.
Canon law has to be changed, not tweaked, not modified, but fundamentally changed so that it stops prioritizing the priesthood of ordained men over the lives of children and vulnerable adults who are sexually assaulted by them.
Barrett Doyle added that the Church is nowhere close to enacting the reforms it must make to stop the twin epidemic of sexual abuse and sexual violence by priests and the almost universal cover-up of that violence when the bishops get away with it. Phil Saviano, himself a survivor of abuse and a member of the Bishop Accountability Board, said it is important to realize that this is not just an issue of homosexuality and the priesthood.
I think that trying to lump it all together under homosexuality is, A, it's a dodge, B, it's not psychologically accurate, and it's not going to lead to a proper solution. And it's also an insult to all the women who have been sexually abused as children, of whom I know many.
Saviano said one fundamental issue he will stress in his meetings with the summit's organizing committee is the importance of releasing the names of all guilty priests and bishops, whether they have been convicted of abuse or even if there are allegations. He said that would be a huge service to public safety. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Well, depression is more than just feeling sad. It's a serious disease that interferes with normal life and a sense of self-worth, and it can end in suicide. Some people do well with standard treatments such as talk therapy or medication, but these treatments don't always work. Fortunately, there are other treatments people can try. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on one treatment that delivers magnetic pulses directly to the brain.
Sonia Kibbe likes playing pickleball.
0-2-1.
Kibbe is a physical therapist in Columbia, Missouri. She is normally active, but last year, because of severe depression, she had trouble making simple decisions.
Just dumb little decisions that we make that we don't even think about, I have to think about. And then it just gets me more stressed out because every little decision is hard.
People who are depressed are often listless. Depression affects eating habits and sleep. Even with medication and therapy, Kibbe thought about suicide and was hospitalized several times. Then she heard about a treatment called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. It does not involve surgery or require anesthesia. TMS uses a coil to deliver powerful magnetic pulses to the brain.
These pulses will stimulate neurotransmitters, which are the chemical signals, which will improve the communication between different regions of the brain that are responsible for mood regulations. And over time, this will improve the symptoms of depression.
It feels like someone gently tapping you on your head, which can cause a headache. After just 1 week, she noticed a real difference.
And I just felt so much better.
After more than 30 treatments, her symptoms of depression almost disappeared.
Basically, 50-60% of people who suffer from treatment-resistant depression will see a clinically meaningful response to TMS, and one-third of these people will go into remission, which means that their symptoms will completely go away.
The U.S. National Institute of Mental Health says two large studies on the safety of TMS found that most side effects, such as headaches, were mild or moderate. But because the treatment is relatively new, long-term side effects are unknown, and more studies need to be done. TMS worked for Kibbe. She returned to work and picked up pickleball again. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.